Roddy v. Astru, Mr. Vrana.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a Social Security disability case. The ALJ in this case made two material errors. One is that he failed to evaluate the opinion of a treating physician about the extent of Ms. Roddy's ability to work. The other is that his credibility analysis was patently wrong.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Does Roddy maintain that she cannot work any hours at all?
No.
She work part-time at the
She could work part-time.
Okay. If they would take into account.
Right. But, yeah, and the statement from the treating doctor, Dr. Wright, which was not evaluated by the judge, and which is required to be evaluated by the regulations, says that she can work 6 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
But that's material because Social Security ruling 96-8P says you have to be able, I mean, the question is, can you or can you not work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week?
It's interesting that the regulations have never taken into account the possibility of part-time work. It's been an all-or-nothing system, hasn't it?
Right. Absolutely. And, I mean, for better or for worse, that's what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
The commissioner does not dispute that the ALJ failed to evaluate this opinion. The commissioner has a couple of arguments in response to it. One is that the ALJ isn't required to evaluate every single piece of evidence. And, of course, that's true, except the regulations also say, and this is 20 CFR 404.1527 B and D, that every medical opinion has to be evaluated. So that.
But there's some statement that Dr. Wright's opinion had been rendered so early in the game that it wasn't relevant anymore.
Right, and the sequence here is important. Ms. Roddy had a car accident in February 1999. She treated with a chiropractor for a while. The chiropractor referred her to Dr. Wright. He saw her in November 99. He issued this opinion. He had had a couple other opinions before this about how much she could work, then issued this opinion in June of 2002, never changed it, never lifted it. It was there the whole time that he continued to treat her.
But the ALJ, I mean, essentially, you're asking us to, and saying that the ALJ made a mistake by not inferring that the lack of a change was deliberate. But did anybody ever call this question to his attention?
No.
In those ensuing years?
To the doctor's? Or?
Yeah, to the doctor's attention. So
no.
We're just assuming that the doctor felt that this continued to represent her.
Yes, and when he had... When he had changed his opinion in previous months, he had so noted.
Mm-hmm.
And then he renders this opinion in June of 2002, continues to treat her through January 4 of 2006, and never changes it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she stopped work and is alleging that she became disabled in November of 2005. So that opinion... certainly seems to be in continuing effect through the end of at least through the end of his treatment of her. There are some other reasons that the commissioner claims that the error is harmless. One is that it was at odds with findings of Dr. Dimitrov. Well, Dr. Dimitrov was a consulting examiner. Dr. Dimitrov saw Ms. Roddy one time, as opposed to Dr. Wright seeing her over at least a five-year period of time.
So I would think that, I mean, he can consider Dr. Dimitrov's opinion, but your argument has to be that he needs to explain why he's crediting it over Dr. Wright.
Right, and at least evaluate it. That's what we're asking.
Yeah.
He simply did not evaluate it. And then, you know, with the harmless error standard, this court in Sarchet versus Chater said that if an ALJ's decision is unreliable because of serious mistake or omission, then the court must reverse unless no responsible trier of fact would find otherwise. Mm-hmm. And then last year in McKinsey, it's harmless error only if the court is convinced or can say with great confidence that the ALJ will reach the same decision. So there is error because of the failure to, and material error because of the failure to evaluate the opinion of Dr. Wright.
And you also make the point about the household tasks, as I recall.
Right, and that's the second mistake, is that the ALJ gave some reasons for finding Ms. Roddy not credible. Four of them are mistaken. One of them is that the ALJ, as Judge Posner mentioned a couple cases ago, said, oh, she can dust, she can cook, she can clean, she can do laundry. Well, yes, she can do all those things, but she has to take breaks. She lives in a mobile home. She can clean one room per day. And so that's not indicative of an ability to work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And, in fact, in the commissioner's reply brief, the commissioner doesn't even dispute that. There's no response to our argument on that point. Likewise, the ALJ, another reason for him finding that she was not credible was that supposedly at the hearing, Ms. Roddy said, my injections and nerve blocks weren't helpful. As we pointed out in our first brief, that simply wasn't the case.
That's not quite what she said. They were helping less
exactly.
over time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So, but the ALJ wrote, I find her not credible in part because she said at the hearing that they weren't helping her. And that's simply not correct. And again, the commissioner in the reply brief to this court had no response to that. A couple other reasons for the ALJ's credibility finding being flawed. One was that the ALJ finds that she could not go seek additional medical treatment because she had had no money and had no health insurance, and then later says, well, I don't think her pain's as bad as she says it is because she didn't seek medical treatment. So the ALJ excuse.
Isn't this the ALJ who makes the comment about she should have gone to the emergency room?
I've seen that in other cases, but I didn't see it in this
so
one.
So did different we one. Today.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, I see I'm into my rebuttal time.
Okay.
I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vrana. Ms. Pedersen?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Opposing counsel Danielle Pedersen for the Commissioner of Social Security. Judge Wood, I want to start with a question that you asked my opposing counsel a few moments ago, and he was talking about how important the sequence is in this case, and I think that is absolutely correct. Opposing counsel would have you believe that the opinion of Dr. Wright that was expressed in May of 2002 was, to quote him, never lifted or never changed, and that is actually not correct. There is a page in the record if you want to look at it. It's administrative record page 279. A vocational rehabilitation clinic actually contacted Dr. Wright in September of 2006, asking him to give them some guidance about plaintiff's functional capacity so that they could appropriately administer the vocational training that they were going to give. And there's a handwritten note at the very top of that page from Dr. Wright saying he had not seen the client recently and that he was not able to render an opinion as to her functional capacity.
Does the ALJ rely on this fact?
Again, the ALJ, we can see, did not specifically weigh Dr. Wright's opinion and did not specifically evaluate the weight to which it was entitled.
See, that's the big problem in this case. And it happens over and over again. The ALJs write these opinions, and they come to whatever result. And then you guys come along, and you create a brief in which you dig differently into the administrative record. And we have the Chenery Doctrine, and we have it for a reason, which is we want the ALJs to be thinking of the right things and to be relying on things. So even if you, had you been the ALJ, might have written a better opinion, you aren't the ALJ, and we certainly aren't the ALJ. So this woman, like some of the other people we've seen today, has a lot of problems. The ALJ utterly fails to come to grips with Dr. Wright's opinion. There's a misstatement in a paragraph on, this seems to be page, whatever page this is, page 7 of 11 of the ALJ's opinion. Surprisingly, the claimant maintained at hearing that the injections and blocks were not helpful. Well, that's just wrong, if you look at that. And so we're left with just nothing.
Your Honor, it is the court has found that a treating physician's opinion must be evaluated. That's something that we concede. This is not, I don't think, a typical case where a treating physician's opinion was entirely ignored. That was rendered during the relevant period of time, or
well,
one that was rendered.
Other than that paragraph, where can you direct me in this opinion? There's one paragraph on page 7 where the ALJ talks about the fact that Dr. Wright has performed multiple blocks and injections, mentions the settlement, lower back pain, and then the misstatement about the helpfulness. That's it. I don't see that as in any way coming to grips with Dr. Wright's opinion.
Again, Your Honor, we are not asserting that the ALJ properly weighed and evaluated Dr. Wright's opinion. We're asking this court to do as the district court did, to find that the ALJ did not commit reversible error when he did not evaluate that opinion.
But that was critical. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, there are errors as well. For instance, the ALJ notes that the MRI was unremarkable. But Dr. Wright had indicated that the MRI demonstrated degeneration in one of the discs as well as a tear in the cartilage surrounding the disc. We don't know what he took into account. We know that he gave, well, I don't know what reasons he gave for rejecting Dr. Wright's opinion.
Well, again, he didn't give any reasons, Your Honor. What he did do was he looked at the time-relevant evidence, and I think most telling in this case is the consultative exam that was performed in January of 2008. Despite Ms. Roddy's claims that she was in constant debilitating pain, couldn't even sit for more than a few minutes, we see that when she saw Dr. Dimitrov, and admittedly that was one exam, but this is a woman who's claiming to be in constant pain on a daily basis. And yet, at this time, on this day, when she admitted to taking no prescription medication and undergoing no prescription treatment whatsoever, she was essentially pain-free. She was moving about without pain. She did not have any pain to palpation. She had slightly limited range of motion, but she was able to squat. She was able to bend, walk on her toes, tandem walk. She had an entirely normal gait. She was able to get on and off the examination table without pain. Now, that is the claimant demonstrating what she's capable of doing despite the absence of treatment at that time. And that is a piece of evidence that the ALJ did properly consider.
It's just that it's not weighed against the other evidence. I think there are actually a great number of people who have good days and bad days. And if the Social Security Administration can say you're not disabled, if they find one day that where you're feeling pretty good, I guess that would be quite a way to cut the rolls.
Well, again, because there was no evidence submitted during the relevant period of time, Your Honor, the ALJ did not have a lot to work with in terms of that period of time, admittedly.
But you're making the assumption, though, that Dr. Wright, it's not like Dr. Wright disappears from the scene in 2002 or 2003.
No, he saw her,
he's,
I believe, in January 2006 for the last time.
And that's
time,
why I'm not sure. We would have a different case, for sure, if his opinion stopped and he moves to the south of France and we never hear from him again.
Well, I think we did hear from him again, Your Honor, and I would urge this court to give that serious consideration. The fact that he was specifically
asked. But the
ALJ asked,
didn't say anything.
No, but this court can still consider that in determining
why,
whether this would serve any useful purpose in remanding this case. The question is, would the ALJ, is there a reasonable likelihood the ALJ would reach a different decision, knowing that Dr. Wright has now rendered an opinion during the relevant period of time that he hasn't seen her and can't say how she's functioning at this time, I think would be compelling evidence. The fact that Dr. Wright's opinion is also completely at odds with the completely normal examination findings during the relevant period of time, and it's not just one day.
One day.
Well, no,
she sees Dr. Dimitrov one day, and then there's this silly use of her daily activities.
Well, the consultative physician also foresaw her for psychiatric reasons. There's no argument that those are involved here, but that was later in 2008, and he also noted that she had normal gait and did not appear to be in significant pain. That's
more evidence not discussed by the ALJ.
Yes, correct. So, in short, we would ask this court the...
Can a finding of disability be based on a person's refusal to take narcotic drugs for pain?
Say that again, Your Honor.
Can a finding of not being disabled be based on the fact that a person simply refuses to take narcotic pain medication?
We certainly don't have that situation here, Your Honor, but
Of course not. I'm asking you a question.
My understanding of the regulations is that under some circumstances, an ALJ may find a claimant is not disabled for failure to follow prescribed treatment if there's some evidence from the physicians that are treating them.
My question. There are some people who will not take narcotic pain medications, even though they're very effective, because of the mental effects. I'm just wondering what the Social Security Administration thinks of that.
Again, the ALJ, if the ALJ finds that that type of treatment would render the person no longer disabled, based on medical evidence that the person would improve with that treatment, the ALJ can draw a negative inference from that. And there could be a situation where that could happen, yes, Your Honor, would be my answer. However, I don't believe...
That's a bad answer. Let me ask you another question. The other lawyer for the Social Security Administration didn't know the answer. What kind of medical training do these ALJs receive?
I mean, again, the ALJs undergo extensive training when they first become ALJs. They go to our headquarters in Falls Church, Virginia, and I believe they undergo a great deal of, not the kind of medical training that a doctor would get, Your Honor, certainly, but they certainly do have physicians come in.
How long is this initial training?
I believe they're out there for several weeks. I can't tell you exactly. I have several friends that recently became ALJs, and I believe it's a period of 5 or 6 weeks. They're certainly not trained like doctors are trained. We're not claiming that ALJs are doctors. They also receive extensive training from our office throughout the years. We do go to their offices periodically and update them on what's happening with the court. And they do also get in-house medical training as well. Again, I'm not suggesting that they get the kind of medical training a doctor gets. They're not dissecting bodies. But I believe that they do have doctors come in and they have other experts come in that do try to make them aware of current developments in medical treatment and things of that nature. That's as close as I can come to answering your question, Your Honor.
That's helpful.
Unless the court has other questions, I will rest on our brief.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Patterson.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Verana, do you have anything further?
Your Honor, I do not, unless you want to ask me some of those same questions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel.